Hey, another great show here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox and
Andrew Hansen.
And in this next hour or so, we're going to do a lot of stuff. We're going to talk to Bedford High hockey coach Marty Myers. We will have Pete Terrier from NH Sports Page. We will talk about
two sport athletes.
I was going to say, and I kept thinking of new ones after we finished that segment. In case you couldn't tell, we record the intro at the end of the show.
Naturally.
It's a secret. Don't tell anybody.
That's why it has to be a super fast intro today.
It is super fast intro. And then last but not least,
Super Bowl review.
In haiku. We have heard on numerous occasions from those associated with the girls hockey team. So we figured in the interest of equal time and fair balance, we would talk to the head coach of the red hot Bedford boys hockey team, Coach Marty Myers. Coach, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
We appreciate it. It's a treat to have you on. So a few things for you, just because obviously we want to make sure that our audience is as familiar with you guys as they can possibly be. Teams won 9 of their last 10. What kind of expectations did you have going into the season?
You know what? We have high expectations. We've had a good run for the last couple of years, and looking at the incoming team this season, I'm not going to lie to you that our expectations are high. We started off a little bit slower than what we wanted, but I think now that we're transitioning from the mid part of our season to the end of our season, I think we're in a good place, and it's right where we want to be.
Right. As we say here, I feel like we say it every week on this show. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. It's the name of the game. So Harry Kozlowski, who does radio for a bunch of the Bedford High hockey games, has given us a good deal of information about the team, particularly leading into the season. And one of the things that he said was, look at the numbers from last year. There are a lot of guys who have graduated, put up a lot of points, assists. How do you get players when you're replacing some talented guys and obviously the leadership that goes along with it? How do you get the team to function as a unit?
You know, we approach it a couple of different ways. The first thing that we do is we have the expectations, right? We want the kids to have fun. We want the kids to work hard, and we want the kids to play together. Working hard, I say, is right. I've been very fortunate at Bedford. The kids come and they're prepared, ready to work hard. Getting them to play together, because they come from so many different organizations, that just takes time. We do a lot of things on the ice, but you know what? We do quite a few things off the ice that I think can contribute to having the kids learn how to work together. Not just when things are going well, but more importantly, when you're down by a goal or when you're shorthanded. Right, that's when you need to really pull together, stick together, and come out of it together.
Here with Coach Marty Myers of the Bedford High School hockey team, and you mentioned some of the getting players to stick together in different situations. How much variation in coaching do you see among different organizations that feed into your program?
You know what? Everything's a little bit different, which is good, right? I'm not going to say that's a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. Every team offers something a little bit different, but generally, when they come to the high school level, they're ready and prepared, and really the kids are excited for their next four seasons playing for their high school. So again, we've been very fortunate with the surrounding youth hockey programs that have really gave us a little bit of a jump up on getting these kids ready to play in the systems and the expectations that we want here at Bedford.
Coach, in your recent hot streak, what's been working well with X's and O's? Has it been a particular line? Has it been the power play? What's been working so well lately?
I'll be honest with you, right? Although we like to spread everything around, right? We like to spread our scoring around. We don't want to be a one-dimensional team, but right now, it kind of goes in cycles, but I'd have to say right now our top line of seniors are probably the hottest right now. You know, they are getting some support from the other lines, but right now we have a top line of seniors: Zach Baer, Eric Flynn, and Kyle Greer. Those three boys right now are probably leading the charge in the scoring department.
And how about things you're working on right now to to make the team even tougher? Any X's and O's or particular areas of the team that you're working on right now?
Absolutely, we work on everything. we certainly this year we're trying to lower our goals against. Right now, our goals against are a little bit higher than what we wanted, what we expect. So we're trying to preach and practice the team defense approach. Although we have good goaltending and we have good defense, we believe it's all six that need to work together in that defensive zone to remain competitive. Right, the fewer goals that we allow, the fewer goals that we need to win. So we try to keep that number down, and we struggled a little bit this year in that department at times. But the good news is that it looks like it's getting better, and we still have time to even improve on that end.
So speaking of time, the team heading into tonight has won 4 in a row, 9 of 10. There are only a handful of games left in the season. You only have a limited amount of things that you can work on between now and the end of the season. How do you keep the Bedford High hockey team's intensity at a high level during practices and games?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. That's a tough question. And every team, every season is a little bit different. And I'm a firm believer of, I'll call it balance. Pushing the kids, working the kids, especially this time of season. We've gone a couple of months with some pretty high intensity workouts and practices. This time of year, what we're trying to do, because the games are slowing down for us, I thought our schedule this year was more front-loaded earlier in the season. With the handful of remaining games, with 3.5 weeks remaining, we're going to balance it. We are. We just came off a good practice last night. The kids worked hard, skated hard, and now we're going to do some things that I say we try to do every year. We try to let down our hair a little bit, have some fun, have some small area games with the kids, and they enjoy that stuff. We have a little 3-on-3 tournament. We have our own little skills competition within our own team. So again, it's although we're still working on some specific skills, but we're also making sure that, you know, the kids are still engaged and having fun, because at the end of the day, you know, that's why we're all here.
It's a tough balance you have to walk. You mentioned hair, and we're with Marty Myers of the Bedford hockey team. Hockey hair has gotten a lot of good PR in the last few years. Any good haircuts there in the locker room?
There are, actually. Again, every year it's a cast of characters, and this year is no different. The kids never cease to amaze me on on their hairstyling.
Now, when you're putting together a team, what intangibles do you look for? And when you're putting that together, how do you see those within a brief tryout or year over year?
It's tough, and I say it's tough because I've been very fortunate with the talent that comes to Bedford. You know what we do? We look for the skill set of the kids. We look for the hardworking characteristics of the players. And you know what? With the tryouts being so short and so quick, we make adjustments, right? We put the lines together quickly at the beginning of the season, and we tell the kids, right? Every good team learn how to grow. And we're growing, we make changes. And the changes are all positive, and all the kids understand everything that we do is for the team. So when, you know, somebody gets changed from one line to another, from a power play to a shorthanded, whatever the specific assignment is asked of the player, the kids are really good. They're very receptive. They understand why we're doing it. We're always trying to improve. We're always trying to get better. And they always want to be a part of it. So every time you make a change, the kids have always embraced it. Said, you know what, Coach? We'll do whatever we need.
That is a skill, though, that will suit them well later in life, whether they're in college in an organization or whether they're working and somebody says, "Hey, I need you to do this." That ability to just say yes, go along, and try to make the best out of a situation—that's an important skill that you're teaching.
Well, you know what? And again, a lot of these kids, and again, very fortunate with these kids. They do. They have a lot of character, a lot of class, a lot of you know. Again, we appreciate their flexibility. We enjoy having them. It's only for a very short period. I can't believe the season's wrapping up. But we've been very very happy this year with the players and the captains of this year's team.
Here with Coach Marty Myers, the coach of the Bedford High varsity team. Now, your son, very inspirational story with the Nashville Predators last year. He's followed in your footsteps. He's taken on a hockey lifestyle. When you guys talk, do you talk about hockey all the time?
I gotta admit, I'm very jealous of my son. I'm very jealous of his full-time job. Yeah, he was last year. He was with the Nashville Predators. He moved on to the. He's currently with the Buffalo Sabres. And we do we do talk a lot. You know what? We do talk more than just hockey. Although that's my passion and that's his job, we have a lot of other things that we certainly have in common. And we like to joke about each other's records and each other's teams, and we draw a lot of parallels. But we do talk a lot of hockey. I'm always looking to steal some things from the National Hockey League. But he's pretty tight to the vest on a lot of the things that they do up there. So anytime I can get something out of him, I certainly appreciate it. But I always enjoy talking to my boys.
That's great. Hey, Coach, speaking of the NHL, there was a play last week that really jumped out at me, and I wanted to ask you about it. It was a breakaway for the Minnesota Wild where the player got held on the breakaway, and he never actually put the puck in the net. The puck never went in the net, but he got credit for the goal because he was held and it was an empty net. And I don't think I'd ever seen that before, and it got me wondering, since we were going to interview you, what's the craziest thing you've ever seen on the ice?
Oh, you know what? Over the years, I've seen a lot.
What the craziest thing I've ever seen.
That's a tough question, to be honest with you. I can't particularly point out one particular thing, but you know what? There's a lot of things that happen on the ice that I kind of just shake my head and say I can't believe that just happened. But yeah, it's amazing the level of play that, even at the high school level, that some of the skill sets that these kids have, it's amazing, it's inspiring, and at times it just kind of leaves you shaking your head.
It's fun. It's exciting for us to be able to have that, to be part of it. I'm sure it's fun for you to help the kids grow, and as they grow through the levels, whether they're juniors working their way up, you name it, high school, college, what advice would you give players to get from one level to the next level?
You know what? I think the advice is simple. I think enjoy what you do, work hard at what you do, and try to be the best at what you do. I think that can apply at hockey, but I think you can apply that easily outside of hockey, because I think it's important that you work hard. I know some things come easier to others, but you know what? I think if you always work hard at it, love what you do, and always try to be the best that you can do, always try to improve, I think that will take it to places that where you'd want to go.
That is certainly sage advice, and selfishly I was asking because obviously I have kids, and you want your kids to enjoy it. You want your kids to get to the next level, have whatever opportunity they can, and it's good to hear you say that. It's something that I'll share with mine as well. Well, Coach, we appreciate the time. We look forward to watching your crew the rest of the way. And as always, love to have you back, and hopefully have you back at some point celebrating a positive end of the season.
Absolutely, and I appreciate your time. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks, Coach. Take care.
That was Coach Marty Myers of the Bedford High Boys Hockey Program, and we'll be back after this. Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and we have a luxury today. Hanson and I are joined by a real-life radio professional.
Yes, we are.
Yes, by the name of Pete Terrier with NHSportsPage.com. And the reason we're bringing Pete on is we want to talk a little bit. We always talk about Bedford and just Bedford stuff, boys, girls, whatever, basketball usually. And in this case, we're going to do a little bit of talking about Division I basketball as a whole, and who better to talk to than the guy who is in it every day as broadcast sports all around the state at this point, from north to south, everywhere in between. So welcome, Pete. Glad to have you here.
Guys, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. I'd never consider myself a luxury, but I'll go with it.
Take it while you can.
Yeah.
So we have seen Bedford play against a number of the top teams in Division One, whether it's Exeter, Winneconnet, Portsmouth. Central game last week was a blast to watch, just two teams nip and tuck for 32 minutes. You have seen others. Who are you thinking is the favorite to come out at the end of the tournament as the Division One champ?
Yeah, I don't know that you can actually pinpoint one team. This is a different year. Every year it seems like, oh, man, this is wide open. Anybody could win it. The last year was a little bit different with Portsmouth entering Division One after they went unbeaten in Division Two, won the championship there, and then moved up and did the same thing in D1. But this is a year where there's a number of different teams that could win it. Bedford's certainly in the mix. We knew that coming in. They had a lot of kids coming back from a team that made the championship game last year. A lot of other teams had a little bit of turnover, including teams like Portsmouth. Exeter was a team that a lot of people were talking about as a favorite at the beginning of the season. But I think as the season's worn on, everybody's beating everybody else. You know, there's a lot of teams with two losses sitting at the top of the standings right now. And if you drill a little bit deeper, you know, Bedford's got, you know, key wins over certain teams that have been beaten by other teams. So it's really so wide open. I don't know that you can, you know, say this team is the favorite. Bedford might be playing as good as anybody right now, having won 10 games in a row, but that could change real quick. Winneconnet, you know, up until a couple nights ago, they were probably the team to beat. They beat Exeter last week. They beat Manchester Memorial in double overtime. And then they go out and lose to Londonderry. So you never really know what's going to happen.
I'll let Hanson go with the next question. Go.
Well, you answered one of my questions, Pete. You know, do you think Bedford can win it all? And we certainly do. But it is fascinating to think about these potential matchups and the way the standings are right now. Portsmouth at 10-2. Winneconnet 10-2. Bedford 10-2. And Bedford has beaten both Portsmouth and Winneconnet. So what do you think about Winneconnet? Because to me, they're the toughest matchup for Bedford because they've got three really dynamic offensive players: Waterhouse at the point, Allen, who's sort of a point forward, and then Shockey. Do you think they might pose the toughest threat to Bedford in the playoffs?
Well, those three guys are probably the best big three out of anybody in the entire state of New Hampshire. There's not another team. You think of Exeter and you think of the Morissette brothers. Josh is a freshman, had a huge game, 28 points the other night. Cody Morissette, everybody knows about him, one of the best athletes in the state. But they don't have that third guy that's comparable, you know, to what Winneconnet has. Manchester Memorial, to me, they don't have that one dominant player, but probably 1 through 6, they're as good as anybody in the state. You know, they bring a kid off the bench, Elvin Barbosa. You look at Winneconnet, they're relatively deep, but after those big three, there's a bit of a drop-off between some of the other guys. So I don't think that their reserves are as good. You know, Bedford might be a little bit deeper, 1 through 8, 9 in the rotation, like Coach Elmendorf likes to go. But I think Bedford and Memorial are probably the two more solid teams, top to bottom on the roster, than anybody else. But Winneconnet does kind of have that star power.
You mentioned Josh Morissette, the freshman from Exeter. And he really jumped out at me because it was the opening game of the season, and watched him play at Bedford. And he almost looked like a young Dirk Nowitzki because he had such a high arc on his shot, great form. And I was just really surprised that he's a freshman. How have you seen him develop throughout the year? How can you describe his game? Because I was also impressed that Nick Mokas was guarding him, mm-hmm. and he was right in his face, but he was just, you know, getting that high release and he was able to score despite the tough defense. What have you seen from him throughout the year?
Yeah, he's really athletic, like his older brother is. And his dad, Dave Morissette, was a star at Central back in the day and played at Plymouth State and was the longtime coach of Riviere College. And Dave's been kind of grooming these boys. And they've had, imagine the basketball games in the backyard those two guys have had. And little brother was kind of beating bigger brother, and they're 4 years apart. So that says something that he's played at a higher level in terms of when he was playing youth sports and playing up instead of playing with kids his age. And he's real good at baseball. His brother actually, you know, has a scholarship to go play Boston College baseball this year. And he's also a tremendous, he was the quarterback of the Exeter football team, and he's a great, you know, guard for the Exeter basketball team. But what I like about Josh is he's a little bit bigger than his brother. I think he's probably more athletic in terms of jumping ability, speed, just overall size, and he can shoot the three. I think his brother Cody is a better shooter, you know, from three-point range, but he's got the mid-range game. He can take the ball to the basket, and he's not afraid. You know, a lot of times with these underclassmen, and you don't really see too many freshmen playing. You see some sophomores making big contributions, but this kid, I think it took him a little while to kind of, I don't want to say gain the trust of his teammates, but when you're playing with a bunch of seniors and the seniors are not getting as much playing time because some freshman, this ballyhooed freshman is coming up. We've heard about him for a long time, and it might be a little chemistry issue among that team. And maybe they had to kind of work together and practice together more than just playing in games together before they kind of get used to each other and accepting of their roles on the team. And I think once Exeter started to kind of accept the fact that, yeah, this is a huge cog in our engine here, our overall engine, that we got to let this kid kind of do what it is that he does. And I think that's made a big difference for Exeter. I think the area where they might be a little bit weak is up front. You know, Bedford, obviously, with Nolan Anderson, a kid with a lot of size, about 6'5", and he's a big kid. Exeter doesn't have a guy like that. Winnicott, Shockey, you know, he doesn't, you know, no one else in the league really has a center that can kind of, you know, match up with them. Maybe Anderson from Bedford is the one guy that can match up really well for him. Other teams like Portsmouth, they got a pretty good, you know, small forward, power forward, and Alex Tavares, a really good shooting guard, and Cody Graham, who just became the school's all-time leading scorer. At Portsmouth, and they had James Best back in the day. I don't know if you guys remember that name, but he was a great player from Portsmouth back in the early 80s and ended up with a Division I scholarship and was for a long time the leading scorer there. But I just think that, you know, what Josh Morsett brings to the table is, you know, that pure, raw talent with athleticism, and I think that makes him really, really difficult. Just imagine what he's going to be like by the time he's a senior.
As long as they can keep everything stocked up around him, that's the one thing. You don't want a one-man show.
Right. But basketball's the one sport where if you have a one-man show, it's not so bad.
You can get away with it a little bit more. We're here with Pete Terrier from NHSportsPage.com. We had the opportunity to watch Portsmouth and Bedford a few weeks back, and Portsmouth had a couple circumstances going on during that game. One, close friend of one of the players who all the players knew had been killed at Sunday River in a tragic accident the week before the game. So the players all had a heavy heart. The other thing, Alex Tavares, who you just mentioned, got into foul trouble early in that game. So when Bedford beat Portsmouth, and if memory serves, they won by what?
It ended up being a double digit.
Yeah, it was like 15, 16 point game, but it was, they pulled away late. The thing that kind of, if you are a Bedford fan looking at somebody who's battle-tested, you almost wonder, did they see the Portsmouth that they might see later in the season, or was that kind of the shell of a Portsmouth team because of some other things that were going on?
They didn't see the true Portsmouth team. Plus, the other thing with Portsmouth is they have who I think is the best coach in New Hampshire high school basketball, Jim Mulvey. This is a guy that spends more time scouting, more time looking at film. You know, he is just like an NBA-style coach in terms of the preparation and the research that he does. You know, other coaches, you know, they got full-time jobs. You know, Jim, not that Jim doesn't. He owns a ticket agency, but he has a lot more time on his hand than most of the average coaches in New Hampshire. And there's some really good coaches, but I think Jim is a great X and O guy. And he's the type of guy, you know, they just won back-to-back championships. Before both years, you know, he pretty much said, well, I don't know how good we're going to be.
Well,
you know,
Lou Holtz. Yeah, you
exactly.
Gotta,
yeah,
I'm worried about Appalachian State this weekend.
Exactly. Yeah.
You just beat him 56-3, pal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things we left on the table. You know, we still got a lot of stuff to work on. That's the type of guy that Jim Mulvey is. So I think he gives them a huge advantage, you know, against other teams just because of him and the players and the system that they have.
Yeah, we noticed that in the first half because we were actually trying to keep track of how many threes they'd made. and it was piling up quickly in the first half. You know, they made six or seven in the first half. Second half, they were getting good looks from three-point range, and they've got multiple guys who can hit from deep, but they just weren't falling.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see where your commentary is coming from in terms of getting his shooters spread and being ready to catch and shoot, and they were getting a lot of good looks that just weren't falling that night. And like Lauren said, Tavares was out for much of the middle of the game in foul trouble. He just never could get going. Didn't even have many field goal attempts because he played so few minutes during that one.
Yeah, and, you know, he kind of came onto the scene last year as a sophomore, and, you know, they had Joey Glenn, they had Sean Parham, they had Christian Pete. You know, I'm sure I'm getting a couple of kids that were big factors on that team. But, you know, he's a guy that was a role player last year. Now he's one of the big guns along with Cody Graham and Mike Sanborn's the kid that's a real good shooter. And he really started lighting it up last year. He's more of a shooter than he is a scorer, where Cody Graham is just a solid player. I mean, he scored more points than anybody in the history of Portsmouth High School basketball. That's saying something. He's been a starter and a key contributor since his freshman season, sort of like Josh Morissette is now with Exeter.
So going back to that thought about freshmen and building a team around specific guys, how much of it, in your estimation, year over year, is a system versus the ability to just get the right crop of players year in and year out?
I think it depends on the coach. Some coaches it's my system, you know, my way or the highway type of thing, and it doesn't really matter what your team is or what they can do. They're going to do that. You know, you see that a little bit more with football than you do with basketball. For example, Exeter, a running football team. Bill Ball likes to run the football. Brian O'Reilly from Pinkerton, they've both been doing it a long time. They run the football. They don't, you know, really change much. Basketball, I'm seeing it at Manchester Memorial right now. Danny Bryson took over. You're going to see that in the game when Bedford and Memorial play on Friday night. Danny Bryson's got his team playing a lot of defense. The last couple of years under Jack Quirk, Memorial wanted to outscore you. They want to beat you 80-75. Now they want to keep you, you know, in the 50s or the 60s. You know, with the way Portsmouth goes about it, they're a defensive-minded team first. They want to keep you down, and then they hope to outscore you by keeping you down defensively. I think Bedford has been up and down a little bit. Sometimes they want to score with you. Maybe in the past they've had teams that could score more. I don't think this team can score as much. You know, Max Chartier is obviously the key to the cog there. One interesting thing about him, and I don't think people around the state that don't follow him as closely as you guys do, he's the rare top scorer that doesn't shoot threes. You know,
yeah, everything mid-range and offensive rebounds, layups.
Well, it's like Cedric Ceballos. He's the garbage man. He's the one who picks up the rebound, the putbacks, all that, which for a guy who's his size, he is slightly built. He's 6 feet, maybe 6'1". You don't expect that guy to be getting the putbacks, but you feel like the possession's trash, and all of a sudden, here he comes, mm-hmm. grabs a rebound, there's a putback, and it's a more athletic player. And then you have the other kind of interesting quirk with Chartier, that there are three of them.
Yeah.
And what are the conversations like in that house when he's scoring 20 a game and there's the playing time is split
right
between the other two? It's and sometimes we see who we call the microwave, Steven.
Vinny.
Vinny Johnson, who comes in and shows up for a couple minutes and gets the offense going and then goes back to the bench, or Chris. That's a unique thing. And
yeah.
Elmendorf's got a quarter of his roster spots in one family.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't a bad thing.
No, not at all.
They've played together, you know, and Chris and Steve are getting more playing time this year than they have in the past. Max been, you know, last year, really, he kind of came onto the scene. Another kid I like from Bedford, Connor Crowley, the kid can shoot it. He's just real solid. He's a good ball handler. You guys mentioned Mokas earlier. He's like one of those glue guys that does just about everything. He's not too flashy. He's not going to score 20 points a game, but he's good for 10, 12 a game, can handle the ball, can guard the other team's best scorer. You know, he can shoot it a little bit, but they're not asking him to do too much. That's kind of what I like about this Bedford team. They all seem to know their roles and where they fit into the mix. I think the key for them, especially lately, is having Nolan Anderson kind of play like a dominant big man that you thought he could be just by looking at him. And he's really, really, I think he had 22 the other night. I know he's been up, you know, around 20 the last couple of games. He he seems to have really stepped up his game over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we saw that at the game at Central that we did recently on both ends of the court. He had a couple big blocks. He got to the free throw line, made four big free throws in the second half. He handled off the dribble and scored a couple times. But I think the thing that we're really touching on here with all these different comments is chemistry. And to me, that's the game changer in the playoffs. And I think the way that Max Chartier contributes with the offensive rebounds and putbacks, that's a huge contribution to chemistry. You've got the three brothers getting along, accepting their roles, and the variety of players that can chip in for Bedford. I wonder if that might be the difference. And then, you know, comparing the chemistry with Exeter, as you said, you know, that's a great test for that team is, you know, can we realize how important this freshman is to us and welcome him with open arms and not worry about what age he is? And then, you know, when a Cunnett with the variety of talent they have is, you know, what chemistry will they show in the playoffs? Do you think that could be the turning point to see who actually takes home the title?
Well, I look at, you know, I was just looking at Bedford's schedule specifically the rest of the way. And after the game against Memorial on Friday, it eases up pretty nicely. I mean, you got to be looking at Bedford really no more than three losses unless someone comes up and bites them, which they certainly could. But they got Memorial, then they got to play Nashua North, a two-win team that's been struggling. Pinkerton, two-win team right now. Spalding, one of the hotter teams. They started off 1-6. They've won five in a row. But they've been real good lately, and they've got a great player in Ari Brakefield. Unfortunately for them, I don't know if you guys know about this, but Isaiah Rose, who was a super sophomore for them, he and his family moved away. So he's
Seriously?
Off the team.
Whoa.
He's not on the team anymore. So the two toughest games the rest of the way, I mean, Trinity's on the schedule, one-win team. BG after that to close the regular season. So Bedford's looking pretty good schedule-wise. You know, if they can win this game against Memorial, I'd say they have a real good shot at getting that number one seed, especially considering who they've beaten if it gets down to tiebreakers and head-to-head. If this thing gets into like a three- or a four-way tiebreaker with a bunch of teams sitting there at the end with just three losses, a bunch of 15 and three teams, forget about it. I mean, all bets are off at that point. But, you know, I think Bedford's in a real good position, not having looked at the other team's schedules the rest of the way, but I think that they're in a pretty good position.
It's an awful lot of math to do late in the season too. Tax your brain. So I think we got the right guy on the show here, Pete Terrier from NHSportsPage.com, to talk about or to share his encyclopedic knowledge of New Hampshire hoops. So we've been talking and we've gone as far back off air as the early 80s for things, and now obviously we're in 2018. What is the best high school team you have seen in the years that you've watched?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I saw the Matt Bonner Concord teams.
Yep.
You know, I actually, you know, I'm in coaching in Goffstown Little League with Eric Strand, who was on that team with Matt Bonner. They had, and he got a scholarship to UMass Lowell. Bonner went to Florida. Ethan Cole went to Syracuse and then ended up at UNH. They had another big guy, 6'6 kid named Jack Reardon on the team who went to Keene State, I think. That was a great, great team. I saw Central almost knock them off once up at UNH. It was either the semifinals or the quarterfinals. They used to do the quarterfinals at UNH. Now they do them at the home of the higher seed. But those Concord teams were great. Bishop Brady had a real good team a few years back with Billy Collins, who ended up going to Rutgers, and Dan Razanin, who ended up going to SNU, and I think he played a little bit at UNH too. Mark Yetton was on that team, the younger Mark Yetton. That was a great team. That Central team from 2013 went unbeaten. They had the Martin brothers, these two brothers that moved in from Florida, showed up on Doc Wheeler's doorstep and said, hey, we play basketball. We're enrolled at Central. And these guys were unbelievable. I mean, two Division II talents. And they already had, you know, some good pieces on that team as well. That was a really good team. You want to go way back, the Drapo-Alosa battles in Division II, Merrimack Valley, Scott Drapo, Matt Alosa from Pembroke. You know, those were great, great, great basketball teams. I mean, Drapo is a big 6'9 guy that you don't see.
No, you don't get those guys here.
Well, actually, if you guys followed Division II or Division III at all, Kearsarge, I don't know if you've heard about this kid, Taylor Matos, from Kearsarge.
I read something about him.
So they won the Division III championship last year. behind him. He was a junior last year, and they have another kid who was a junior last year by the name of Tommy Johnson. Taylor's going to get a Division I scholarship. He's already had numerous offers. He's a legit 6'9", big, not string bean 6'9". I'm talking good size. He's developed his outside game. And this other kid, Tommy Johnson, who is a guard, a shooting guard, but he's about 6'2", regularly dunks. Those two guys, to me, you know, are the best 1-2 punch in the entire state, regardless of the division. And they're playing in Division II now. They moved up to Division II after winning Division III. But that is a great team that's going on right now, specifically because of those two guys. They actually got suspended for four games earlier this year for some kind of rules infraction with the team. And they lost all four games where those two guys didn't play, and they haven't lost again, you know, since then. I don't expect them to lose. But this has been so many great teams over the years. You know, I remember one game in particular where I saw Keith Friel, who ended up going to Notre Dame on a scholarship in Virginia. I saw Oyster River playing against Bishop Brady, and Keith Friel hit like 13 or 14 three-pointers in the game. He had 50-something points. It was unbelievable. That was probably the greatest single game performance I've ever seen in person in New Hampshire high school basketball.
It's a long storied history up here, and certainly some fun stuff. Matt Bonner, obviously the biggest name based on his NBA prowess, but some of those other guys, I can't imagine scoring 56 points in a week, let alone in a game.
Oh my God, it was unbelievable. And you know, there were times, you know, there was three-pointers in the Bonner days, but in those 80s, I don't think the three-pointer came into effect until like 1986.
Yeah, right.
So a lot of these players, you know, could have had more points to their total because they were shooting it from way downtown. They just weren't getting credit for the extra point.
Yep. So, Pete Terrier, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
We look forward to having you back soon. And that was Pete Terrier from New Hampshire Sports Page. NH Sports, if I could say that, it would be super nice.
Well, you just have to type it. You don't have to say it.
Right.
If you want to go visit.
NHSportsPage.com. I will do my best to enunciate. We'll be back after this. All right, so we're back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and for those who know or maybe don't know, I have a problem where I read Deadspin a bit too much, and I actually found this really cool thing for Google Chrome that you can use called Block Site. So now every time I type in deadspin.com, it takes me to a site that has something that I actually need to do for work. So in my idle time, I can't just type in deadspin.com. I type in deadspin.com, and it takes me to, of all things, the Bedford Little League sponsorship, Google Drive. So I've trained myself not to. However, there's this thing called a smartphone that I can occasionally look at. And I saw an article today that said, scrub minor leaguer traded to New York Yankees. Of course, that is a clickbait headline, obviously, because that scrub minor leaguer is none other than
Russell Wilson.
Yeah, and so that kind of got us thinking because we love two-sport athletes. Like, and I think it's a generational thing. Kids who grew up in the 90s, that was what we knew because of a certain Bo Jackson.
Who knows himself.
But, like, I go and I tell stories to my kids about Bo Jackson. And there are some stories, and we talked about it with Andrea Manso a couple weeks ago, but Harding and Kerrigan, you tell a story like that, and you're like, I don't even know how this makes any sense. It's preposterous. Tyson Holyfield, Bo Jackson, the idea that he could be at once the most feared power hitter in the game with the best arm, the fastest base runner, and the best running back in the NFL, and the best player in the history of any video game ever, the running back in Super Tecmo.
Of course.
So, okay, if you're starting a list and you're saying who is your number one, so we'll go back to it. So Russell Wilson traded from the, and on paper it looked like this was a kind of a joke transaction so that Wilson could go to the Yankees and kind of, air quotes, retire as a Yankee.
Right.
But now he says he's going to go to spring training. And I walked into the kitchen this morning and I said to my wife, that is not fair.
You know,
how come he gets to go to spring training and we don't?
Well, he's a minor league player, and the Yankees wanted him in their farm system.
Apparently so. But, like, come on.
But
like,
right,
how's
so,
that, like, no, that's not fair.
That's not really what it's all about. And you know, this is about two-sport athletes, this segment.
Yes.
But it's also about, you know, killing two birds with one stone. This is the Fox's Hot Stove Report.
Oh, we are. Sweet.
And it's at the same time, it's a top five two-sport athletes. But, you know, this baseball player, Russell Wilson, is not going to have a big impact on Major League Baseball next season like most other Fox Hot Stove Report candidates or features do. But, you know, I think it's great for Russell Wilson. I think it's a smart move because he's going to go to spring training, and what he wants to do is he wants to soak up the knowledge of Giancarlo Stanton and Judge. And it's almost to me like it's a business CEO who wants
yeah.
to go,
oh, yeah.
you know, rub elbows with other CEOs and pick up their tricks of the trade. And so maybe it's going to be about, you know, visualization. He's going to talk to those guys about, you know, what helps them perform at their peak. And I'm sure he's going to draw some things that will help him, you know, take it to the next level in Seattle with his day job, so to speak, with the Seahawks.
It's interesting to see it. It's fun. The 14-year-old kid in me secretly hopes that he gets into spring training and just starts killing it, and the Yankees have no choice, and he's playing for them in the spring. Because I don't know what happened, but we went through the 80s, and so I'll go through the top five in a second. But we went through the 80s with you had your Bo Jackson and you had your Deion Sanders, and we haven't had that in a really long time. And I think it's good for kids to see, because as anybody who has fallen asleep through all 14 previous episodes of Fox on Sports would know, I'm a big fan of don't specialize. Like, I would much rather be jack of all trades, master of none. You meet new people, you learn different skills, and it seems like the undercurrent, as we've talked to coaches within these interviews, is you really do have the opportunity to learn life skills and different life skills from different coaches in different environments. What you learn from a baseball coach is going to be vastly different from what you learn from a football coach because of the approach. And I'm typecasting a little bit, but the approach of those coaches will be different. So it's good for you to learn from different people because you never know who your mentor is going to be. So Russell Wilson, to have that opportunity, I am just 44 years old. If somebody said, yeah, you can go back to spring training, be like, I'll see you in 3 months. You can bring the kids down whenever you want, but I'm all set. Thanks.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. You know, and he's a role model, so he's a great guy to be doing it. Like you said, it's something that kids can look up to and use to reinforce the idea that, hey, you don't have to pick one sport as a 9-year-old and push out everything else. You've got a lot to learn from multiple sports. You're on different teams, different coaches. And so there is a lot to be said for it. You don't have to specialize. I don't think with Russell Wilson that we're going to get the type of two-sport athlete with a Bo Jackson or Deion Sanders. Russell Wilson's lifetime minor league numbers are .229 batting average, 5 homers, 26 RBIs, 19 stolen bases over 2 seasons at the A level with Colorado Rockies. And so he's had a few years off from actual game competition. But the top two two-sport athletes on our respective top five lists, I think, are the same. For me, it's Bo Jackson number one, Deion yep. Sanders number two. And with Bo Jackson, you know, the thing that I just cannot believe, you know, you described him so well with the immense talent in both sports. But, you know, the thing we forget is that he only played 4 years in the NFL.
Yeah.
And, you know, in baseball, he didn't play much longer. You know, he had one season in 89 where he hit 32 homers, 105 RBIs, 26 stolen bases. So he was sort of at the top of his game.
Oh, yeah.
In NFL, do you know that he only has 16 career rushing touchdowns? And we think of him as an absolute legend.
Well, but think about when his touchdowns happened and how they happened. So he runs up the tunnel at the Kingdome.
Right.
And on a 92-yard run, because he had so much in his afterburners that he didn't stop, the entire country saw that on Monday Night Football. He runs through Brian Bosworth, who was the Boss. Like, those two things are seared into the mind of anybody who watched sports in the late 80s, early 90s. The other piece that goes with that is the home runs that he hit and the things that he did in a pre-SportsCenter, pre-SC Top 10 era, led off the All-Star game with a home run because Tony La Russa decided he's my best hitter and I want to get him more at-bats. And he hit it off of Rick Rushel, who was about 82 years old at that point. But hit one 448 feet off the baggie in Anaheim Stadium.
Do you have any special memories of that event?
I was there. That would be it. And I was there when he ended his football career, too, when he got his hip pulled by Kevin Walker on the Bengals. But and I'm not Googling any of this. It's seared into my brain. But you drive by McAdory High School in Bessemer, Alabama, and what do you see? There's a huge sign that says, home of Bo Jackson, Alabama High School decathlon champion. Like, dude was a beast. I have my list here, and I guess I'm going to ask one question as it pertains to the list. Am I limited to what a guy did professionally, or can he be two-sport based on college and pro?
Oh, it can be college and pro, absolutely.
Okay.
So while you're updating your list, I'm going to describe number two here, Deion Sanders.
Yes.
And just point out that, first of all, he's my number two. We're not talking about best. We're talking about favorite.
Okay.
And, you know, he was never on one of my more favorite teams. I've always liked the Braves. But Bo Jackson was on the Royals, so he's number one for me. But the thing that jumped out for me with Deion is, you looking back at his stats, he scored 19 career touchdowns.
Yes.
More than Bo Jackson.
Yeah, well, he was there longer, but yeah.
You know, he did. He did play a lot more seasons, but he had nine on interceptions. He had, I think, six on punt returns, three on kick returns, and one on a fumble return. And, you know, that you just talk about memories getting seared in your brain.
Prime time.
Running up the sideline to another touchdown. I mean, that happens so many times. But also, 19 times. From baseball, speaking of the Royals drafted him in 85 in the sixth round. They were ahead of the curve. Imagine if he'd been on the outfield with Willie Wilson and all those guys. Then the Yankees drafted him in 88 in the 30th round. But in 92, Deion's first, you know, big year in the big leagues. He played 97 games. What great numbers. He hit 304, hit 14 triples, six doubles, and eight homers. Filthy. I mean, what an athlete. And just to watch him run out a trip, leg out a triple, I'd like to know what the fastest home to third is on a triple. In terms of average speed on triples, he's got to be at the top.
Well, he made it look so easy that other guys said, I can do that too, and they couldn't. And Deion and Bo were both able to kind of flip it on and flip it off. And I said about Russell Wilson, that's not fair, but it's also not fair. It's not fair that you're able to be among the best in the world doing those two things and not put in the same amount of practice, not a game, practice, that the rest of us would have to in order to get to that level. So I'm debating because Jim Thorpe, again, Olympic decathlete, 1912 Olympics, and also play in the major leagues for the New York Giants at that point.
He was that era's Bo Jackson.
He was that era's Bo Jackson. And it's hard to argue with. I was debating putting Jim Thorpe ahead of Deion, but now that we talk about who your favorite is, I'm hard pressed to say that it's not Bo and then Deion. Deion was just fun. Number four is one that people don't think of as a two-sport athlete. At least I have him on my list, Jim Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Syracuse, Heisman Trophy winner playing football. But if you talk to people who are big-time lacrosse aficionados, they will tell you that Jim Brown is among the best lacrosse players in the history of the game. And again, that's just it's a bizarre artifact of a time and place. And I'm sure it had something to do with his athletic ability, his moves, but the hand-eye coordination required to play lacrosse is also not something you typically see in the game of football either.
That's right. So he's number four on your list?
He's number four on the list. Number five, just because I was always fascinated by it, and I still make reference, and my kids, I don't think, get it, Roy Jones Jr.
Okay.
I always thought it was pretty cool that he had a fight that night after playing, and granted, it was a minor league basketball game. He was playing in the USBL, but he played a USBL game that day and played in a basketball game that night.
Okay, so basketball came after?
Or no, check that. USBL game that day, boxed in a fight that night.
That's impressive because you use up a lot of energy playing basketball, you know, in terms of stamina-wise, to then go out and box that night.
Yeah, but it's like, but that's just cool.
That is cool.
And I have other random guys. I threw Herschel Walker on this list because bobsled is a sport.
It
people
is.
People forget about that, too. After the NFL career, he goes in bobsleds. You have two of the best NFL quarterbacks of all time who got drafted to play Major League Baseball. John Elway and Dan Marino both did. You have Michael Jordan, who, say what you will, Michael Jordan may not have had the most illustrious baseball career, but to be, he still hit 200 in double A, which you could, I would safely bet you could grab 95 at least percent of American males, maybe more, and say, go play a season in double A and we'll see how your numbers stack up compared to Air Jordan.
And they'd fall short. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten about MJ. That's a great one. But it dovetails well into my number three. Bo and Dion. Another baseball-basketball duo, Danny Ainge.
Oh, I forgot about him. That's nice.
And this is, you know.
He was a Toronto Blue Jay. He had 218.
Yeah, well, career.
Was that 80 or 81?
He played from 79 to 81. Career 220 hitter in the big leagues.
Yeah.
Two homers, 37 RBIs, 12 stolen bases.
Forgot about that.
So what happened was he had those numbers. And he decided, well, not quite good enough. I'm going to go play basketball. And then he had a great long career, more than a decade, where he was one of the stars of my favorite team of all time, the 85-86 Celtics. Yep. So he was a starter on that team, averaging double digits. So Danny Ainge is number three on my list. Number four is Russell Wilson, for the reasons we've already discussed. Number five is a guy who folks aren't going to know, because he's from my high school and he didn't play in the major leagues, but he was a great first baseman, played at the University of Maine, went on to play 7 years in the minor leagues as a pitcher. And it was interesting because he was playing throughout his college career as a first baseman. He wasn't pitching. He got noticed as a tryout because he was throwing from first to third and they clocked him at like 88. And, you know, it was an Atlanta Braves tryout and they said, we're going to put you up on the mound. And so he's throwing gas, and they say, we might draft you as a pitcher. He's like, well, great. And he went back to his UMaine team, and he said, you know, maybe I should pitch a little bit. And they said, no, you're a hitter. He's like, really? Okay, all right. Did what the coaches wanted. But sure enough, on draft day, he gets a call. The Atlanta Braves had drafted him. And then he had a really nice career getting up to at least double A as a pitcher. But after his baseball career ended, several years later, okay, he's living and working in the Boston area. And he's, I think, either 36 or 37, playing in a men's hockey league. Somehow he gets noticed. He gets offered a minor league hockey contract, goes and plays, finishes out the regular season. His team doesn't make the playoffs. Another team in the league who is in the playoffs offers him a deal to join them. And it was just crazy because he's mid to late 30s, beginning a new sport as a professional athlete. And, you know, we'll never know if he would have gotten to the NHL by the age of 40 because he decided to, you know, hang the skates up and continue with his professional career as a business person. But, he's number five on my list for somebody who was able to do it, you know, unexpectedly out of the blue in his late 30s with a new sport.
What was his name?
Brian Jolliffe.
Brian Jolliffe. There you go. I have others for your consideration. Jack Del Rio, all-pro linebacker. I don't think he's coaching anywhere as of this moment, but was most recently the coach of the Raiders, all Pac-10 catcher and all Pac-10 All-American linebacker, both at USC. I had another one who popped into my head and very quickly went out, but it's the amount of commitment required to do that at a collegiate level is insanely difficult. Donovan McNabb would be another one. He was well-known as a quarterback, but a backup point guard at Syracuse. The amount of time commitment that is required, the amount of focus that is required, the way that your teammates can accept you from one to the other, that's also got to be a bit of a challenge too.
Yeah, I was just thinking about how a nice, easy way to do it is to play in two seasons that don't overlap. So baseball, football is easiest.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of, I can't believe I forgot about my buddy Chris Young from Princeton.
Oh, yeah.
Who has
6'10".
Played,
yeah.
He's 6'10". He's played in the majors for a long time, had a great career. He got a ring with the Royals in 2015, but he was an excellent basketball player. He's Ivy League Player of the Year. He was good enough to play in the NBA, but, you know, decided to go with the baseball route to try and have a longer career. And just such a down-to-earth guy. Really enjoyed playing with him and have enjoyed watching him with his success after college.
I was going to say the last few years have not been met with quite as much success, unfortunately.
Well, he's had some injuries, getting older, velocity going down just a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's had a great career.
He had a very good career. So with that, the Fox Hot Stove Report concludes. We will come back for a brief segment to end the show and read a little bit of haiku and talk a little bit about the Patriots. After this, you're listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. We are back here on Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1, and we're going to close up. We took a little bit more time with some of the earlier segments, which was a good thing because we were having fun. Pete Terrier was an awesome guest to have and gave us a lot of insight on D1 hoops in New Hampshire. I guess not even just D1, everything. But we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the Super Bowl, and Hanson is going to lead in with a little bit of haiku, as it were. Published author Andrew Hanson. A little bit of Gronk haiku.
Yeah, we're going to focus on Gronk because with the recent reports of big-name actors trying to push Gronk to Hollywood.
That's funny.
To pursue a full-time career in film, it could be that the two lasting memories we have of Gronk, the last two images in our mind, are the following. All right, here's play number one.
Hang on. I wrote a haiku about Gronk as well.
I want
to say it.
Okay.
It goes like this. Gronk, 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 Gronk. Gronk, 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 Gronk. Gronk, 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 Gronk.
So you would have had the over on the over-under, and Gronk was 4.
All the 17 Gronks in a row. Okay, go, stop, sorry.
Play number one. Gronk snags corner fade, face full of friendly blue turf, stands for dance, kick, spike. That was the positive memory.
That is the Gronk spike, too.
That put him in the lead?
Yes.
And that was just fun to see.
Economy of words.
The second one wasn't quite as fun.
No, not so much.
Down 8, 9 seconds, 505 yards passing, Tom's snap near midfield. Brady eludes rush, slides up to the 45, launches Hail Mary. Eagles swarm on Gronk, batting and tipping ball. Down, zeros on the clock.
I like the use of eagle swarm because it kind of gives me the visual of like buzzards on a carcass, which if Gronk goes to Hollywood... It's kind of like the buzzards on the carcass of his NFL career. So we were talking about this. There are two sides to every coin. And I don't think any of us who are listening, doing this broadcast, like we've all won things playing sports. We've all lost things playing sports. You win and you lose in life. It's just kind of how things go. But it's hard for me to imagine what winning or losing a Super Bowl would feel like, either the euphoria or the absolute trench feeling that you get that this is over and I can't do anything to fix it. So Gronk had that side of it where the game's over and maybe I just don't want to do this anymore. Maybe this stinks.
Maybe it's time to hang them up.
Maybe it's time to hang them up. Like, it's not even because I want to have kids. I want to be Gronk for longer. But Nick Foles in Victory, and you may have seen this quote, I think the big thing is don't be afraid to fail. I think in our society today, Instagram, Twitter, it's a highlight reel. It's all the good things. Then when you look at it, when you think like, wow, you have a rough day, my life's not as good as that, you think you're failing. Failure's a part of life. It's a part of building character and growing. Without failure, who would you be? I wouldn't be up here if I hadn't fallen thousands of times, made mistakes. We're all human. We all have weaknesses. And I think throughout this, it's been important to be able to share that and be transparent. I know when I listen to people speak and they share their weaknesses, I'm listening because it resonates. So I'm not perfect. I'm not Superman. I might be in the NFL. I might just have won a Super Bowl. But hey, we still have daily struggles. I still have daily struggles. And that's where my faith comes in. That's where my family comes in. I think when you look at a struggle in your life, just know there's an opportunity for your character to grow. And that's just been the message. Simple. Something's going on in your life and you're struggling. Embrace it because you're growing. So you have he's at the peak of it, but he's standing up on the edge looking back down and remembering where he was, which is it's an interesting place to be. And, you know, I sent it to my older daughter because that's most of sports. And honestly, you hope life isn't completely failing, but you hope that there if you fail. What do you learn from it? How do you look back and say, I'm going to fix it? Because, I mean, don't forget this guy, and the story's been told, but Eagle starting quarterback, huge contract. This is like I'm reading a haiku. career goes in the toilet because of Jeff Fisher, wins Super Bowl 2018. That may have been haiku. But it's the ups and downs. And it was really, he was the redemption story for better or for worse. And so.
Yeah, really memorable perspective for him to be on top of the mountain and to remember that he hasn't always been on top and to look back down and really cherish the fact that he was there and he had overcome.
I mean, not everybody gets to the pinnacle of their careers hosting a sports show on Bedford 105.1. So, you know, we can all hope. But we'd like to take a quick moment, thank our guests that we had on the show today. We were fortunate to have Marty Myers, the Bedford High boys hockey coach. We had Pete Terrier from NHSportsPage.com, and then saw one of his cohorts last night at the basketball game as well. And, of course, Hanson and I sat here and talked about sports for a while. So thank you to you, the listener, for sticking with us, and thank you to everybody here at WBNH, Bedford 105.1. Harry Kozlowski, Bill Jennings, Chris Gentry, Colleen Richardson, and everybody else in town and out of town that chooses to join us.
Yes, sir.
So thank you again. We'll be back next week. Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.